Welcome, everyone, to the Australian Bitcoin Podcast. You're listening to myself, Justin, and Jeremy from Hardblock. Today, we'll be discussing how to upgrade your email privacy. How's it going, Jeremy?
Not too bad, Justin. How are you?
Yeah, can't complain. It's pretty big news recently.
I know. We were just, you know, walking, making a coffee in the office, and on the front of the newspaper, it says Bitcoin Bowser's in massive text. It was quite a big announcement by OTR.
Pretty random way to come across it as well, because it wasn't really prolific on social media or anywhere yet.
No, and a little disappointing that it's a crypto.com payment service, not a Lightning app or wallet.
That's true. Yeah, it sounds like really good news, doesn't it? And I immediately thought that they would be settling in something like Lightning and it would be going directly to OTR, but no, they do have an intermediary. And it is, yeah, kind of like a pseudo banking intermediary, I guess, when you look at the way that it might function.
Yeah, still very interesting. And I think like a lot of people won't have read the details just to see Bitcoin on the front page, you know, and Bitcoin, you pay for Bitcoin at OTR. And also interesting that the newspaper chose to highlight Bitcoin, not crypto, because you can also pay with Dogecoin. Why you want to do that, I don't know. But still, the paper saw the real message, which is positive.
Absolutely. And regardless, I think any news about Bitcoin, any mention of the word Bitcoin just makes it more familiar.
Yes.
So more people start looking into it.
Yeah.
People be, you know, they're less concerned by it if they ever consider putting a, you know, portion in their portfolio. So either way, good news. And I think gradually then suddenly it is still at play where an organization like OTR might adopt it in this sort of like, I don't know what you call it, intermediary type fashion where they're still a third party. But who's to say in a few years' time after they become comfortable with it that it's not then moved truly into something like just a Bitcoin decentralized network where they decide to take Lightning settlements rather than having crypto.com as their third party.
Yeah, or even if you just, you know, you're a medium-sized company and there's a passionate Bitcoiner in there who wants to create Lightning, accept Lightning payments, it's a much easier sell when, you know, OTR's already doing it.
Yeah.
You know, like it all helps, I think.
Definitely. And I think in a lot of boardrooms having these kind of discussions, there would be people that are reluctant and that are cautious, which makes a whole lot of sense. And so this to me is probably an easier sell if someone's really keen on Bitcoin or, you know, crypto and alternating capitals. This would probably be a much easier sell than saying, hey, let's self-custody it all by ourselves.
Yeah,
let's hold it on our balance sheet. Let's be ultimately responsible for integrating all the infrastructure. That seems like a huge sell compared to saying, hey, look, guys, we just need to opt into this service and all of a sudden we can offer this to customers.
Yeah.
Like that to me is a no-brainer. But again, it's like a Trojan horse, isn't it?
Yeah, no, but it's all good signs.
Absolutely. Yeah. Just one last point on that is that I found it interesting. Right underneath, they had the United Australia Party's ad that talked about how, I don't remember exactly what it was, but the context was saying inflation and debt and, you know, rises are getting out of control. So the fact that they paired that Bitcoin news with a political statement, but still a very true political statement about the state of our debt bubble. It's good that thing is being talked about a bit more. It's being it's like the Overton window has shifted to the point where it's now okay to talk about things like inflation, the debt crisis, and alternative forms of money. Whereas, you know, you go back a few years or 10 years, the Overton window said, if you were talking about those things, you were crazy. That was not you know, an appropriate kind of context. Very cool. Well, we'll see where that goes.
Yeah.
But for today, we are talking about upgrading your email privacy, talking about why to do that, what are some of the ways to go about it, as well as some of the difficulties that you might face while doing it. So probably good just to start at the why. Like, why would someone upgrade their email privacy? For you personally, Jeremy, what's the motivator?
I guess for me, I had a big moment where someone pointed out to me a search term to put into DuckDuckGo and Google and compare the results. And it was quite clear to me that Google was filtering the results in an impartial way. And at that moment, I lost trust in Google.
Mm.
And as I learned more about the way that they operate and what they, like the data that they have and what they're able to do with it, I just didn't really want to associate with them. And I think with emails, I'm learning more now, like the emails, you can't be completely private because I believe it's the header and the subject. There's some part of the email that can't just, it's part of the protocol. You can't be made encrypted.
You're right, yeah.
But it was more, you know, this kind of, I suppose you could say I've had this relationship with Google since about 2004. I was invited to Gmail when it was beta, so you couldn't just sign up, you had to have an invitation. So I've had it, it's basically been my main email address since I finished uni. And then to have this kind of realization that this is how, these are their values and it's really not aligned with my values at all. It was a big step. I think, you know, like your email address you've had for a long time has got all of your emails in it. That's how people contact you. But I've actually found, and we'll go into more detail, but there's actually a silver lining in being able to start fresh and have a, you know, proper email again that you manage properly. So we'll go into all that. But for me, it was really about, you know, seeing how integrated and how my life is kind of stuck with this entity who I'm realizing is just not looking out for my best interest at all.
No, that's right. It's once you learn the model is to serve you ads,
yeah,
and to make you accessible to advertisers, and almost everything, every feature that's built is linked into that in some way, which means you gain convenience, but then it kind of feels a bit gross to me. And there's countless news stories about Google and Gmail, especially scraping data and again, selling it to advertisers, even in ways where they're not allowed to, or they haven't actually gotten your permission for it. And the fines that they pay for those sort of things are exorbitant, of course, but if you look at the profit, it just becomes a cost of doing business, basically. So it's not disincentivized really to sometimes go against what they've said in their terms of service just to get a little bit of extra data mining in. And that doesn't sit right with me.
Yeah. And to me, it's not even the advertising. Like, I kind of get that model and I've blocked ads. They don't really get to me anyway. It's more essentially the censorship and their kind of belief that their way is right and therefore censoring those who are not. And then kind of wondering, where is this data going? Like, it's not just advertising. It's being sold to governments. And it's not a clear two-way relationship.
That's right. And it's all based on trust, isn't it? And I think the Bitcoin ethos of verify, don't trust, or I think it's the other way around. It sounds like catchier, but it doesn't make sense to then say, I'm going to have all of my personal details. If you use Gmail, for example, for business, to say all of my professional details as well, you know, my kids' photos,
yes,
you know, my general habits. There's no point trusting all of that with a particular organization, because that organization could have a bad actor. They could have someone who's a good actor, but they get coerced or compromised or bribed or incentivized in some way. Or it could just be, again, the normal operation of business of selling that data on. And so I guess something that we're talking about here, which is sort of implied, but we haven't said specifically, is that your data that gets sent via, say, Gmail is not end-to-end encrypted,
yep,
which means that it's very easy for an observer to be able to compromise and read that data, especially if they have any sort of link in with Gmail themselves. And of course, Gmail themselves have complete access to that data. Now, they will say that it's encrypted at rest on their servers, but they have the key to that encrypted data, which means they can always access it. It's never like end-to-end encrypted. The way that that works differently is that it gets encrypted on your device, it gets sent and it remains encrypted. And then when it gets to the receiving device, like whoever you're sending that email to, then it becomes unencrypted for that person to see. So all along that that transfer process, it's called like a zero knowledge protocol, where no one else has knowledge of what's going on there, apart from the fact you're sending an encrypted email. So a private email is usually going to be something that's end-to-end encrypted or has this zero knowledge encryption, which usually means about the same thing. But Gmail is not that, which is why some of what we're talking about here is so important.
Yeah, this is not the easiest step in privacy. It is a bit tricky, and you kind of didn't have that stronger motivation to do it. But I was reading, I think it's the Cypherpunk Manifesto. They're talking about like for hundreds of years, we've had privacy technologies. Like if you think about like a wax seal on an envelope, that's essentially a privacy technology, right? Mm. And if you discovered that, you know, back in the day when we sent letters, that Australia Post was opening and reading every single one and putting it into a database, you'd be pretty unhappy about it. Like, even though you don't necessarily have anything to hide, it just, there's an uncomfortable feeling that comes with that. And the thing that I think is concerning to me is, if that data is there forever, can you imagine the machine learning technology that in 20 years that could be going through this, and who knows what they might interpret out of that? So that's the thing that really kind of, I guess, motivated me to do this thing, which is a little bit hard.
Yeah. It comes back to something just like informed consent, isn't it? If you're agreeing to give something away, like your privacy or your data, you want to know what that's used for. And most people might say, hey, look, for my threat model, I don't really care about some of this stuff at the state that it's at currently. And that might make a lot of sense. But you're right. You know, fast forward 10 years, 50 years, what is that being used for? Yeah. Would you agree with all those things that it's being used for? Do you even want it used for those things to begin with? Like, there's all these questions that people, I don't think, are considering now. And to be honest, I haven't even considered some of those things of like what happens in decades to come. I mean, I'm grossed out enough by just the current state of things to change.
Yeah.
So what are, maybe we'll talk about some of the broader challenges of changing to, say, like a private email service, and then we'll get into the details about how would you, you know, go about doing that.
Yeah. So I think what we discussed before is, we do recommend getting a password manager first. My experience was that having a password manager made what we're about to discuss a lot easier. I guess for me, firstly, it's just getting your head around that you're going to do it. And then it is quite an incremental process. So if you're like me, like I had a Gmail and it's actually nearly full. So there's kind of a good incentive for me to switch. Obviously, you've got to decide which service to use. Mm. I went with ProtonMail because anything we discuss here, these are not affiliate links or anything. Like, these are just our personal research. I went with ProtonMail because the reputation was good amongst people that I trust. I mean, to be honest, I don't understand exactly how all this encryption works. So I'm relying on people that I trust to explain it to me. I'm not one of those people who can go to the open source software and actually look at the code.
Mm.
So I think, you know, your first step is that you don't choose one. The good thing is they're all free to try. But I kind of have this thing now that I think we should pay for the things that we want to use. I think I kind of wonder if we actually paid for Google, would they have become like this?
Yeah. You
know, they started off being like, don't be evil. And then they changed that. And I think a lot of the reason is they have real costs. Like, they have servers and all employees. Someone has to pay for that. If we're not willing to pay for them, they've had to go find someone else. So I think it is really important that once you do choose a service to pay for it, we'll talk about some of the costs are very reasonable. And I think a lot of that's psychological because, you know, before, like, this is electronic mail, right? We used to send letters that cost, like, back in the day, 50 cents. It's now $1.10.
Mm.
There's more inflation. But, you know, we wouldn't question paying 50 cents to send a letter. Now we don't want to pay anything to send one email. What if you just paid 0.1 cent or 1 cent per email? It's no difference to your financial situation, but psychologically, we find it hard to pay for these services. So I do think it is really important to choose a service and then pay for it so that the company that you're partnering with, hopefully for decades, is sustainable. So that was, I guess, the first thing is choosing the service. And then slowly you go through each of your accounts. Every time you get an email and you're like, oh, that's come from this service, you know, let's say it's Twitter, you go in and change that email. And I suppose concurrently, maybe you want to sort of explain, you need to set up your own email and also the aliasing service at the same time.
That's right. So I think we'll jump into the sort of step-by-step in a bit. But I guess conceptually what you're saying is you keep your old email around for a while. And that a while might be a year, might be 18 months.
Yep.
But then you have a new email set up, a private email set up. And basically as emails come in onto your old email, you then determine, do I want to move this across or do I want to eventually just leave this here to, you know, be in the ether forever and I don't need to see these emails anymore. If you want to move it across, you sign into that service, you point it at your new email address, the private one, and that's just a gradual transition. Don't feel like you need to knock it all over in a day or a weekend. I think doing it gradually over the course of time, because there are some things that you won't get all at once. So like end of year financial reporting or quarterly bills. So if you sit down to try to do it all in a day, today, for example, there might be bills, there might be emails that you're going to receive on your old email address that you don't realize until we get several months down the track. So keeping it live for a while makes your job easier, but it also makes it a better job done as well, because you don't miss anything in there and then become very frustrated of having to transfer a new email address and losing some really important stuff.
Yeah, and there is a really good feature in ProTon, and I can't speak for the others, where you actually can bring all of your Google Mail or other emails across. I chose not to do that because I've got several gigabytes. I think it could be 10 gigabytes worth of emails because I basically had never deleted anything. So I kind of, at the moment, I'm at this position where I have an auto forward on my Gmail to my Proton Mail, and then the Gmail is set to delete those. But I think it's going to be quite hard for me to then get rid of that Gmail forever because it's an archive of 15 years worth of emails for me. So different people have different ways they solve this problem. But, you know, basically from day one, you really could, if you want, forward your Gmails to whichever email service you choose and then not really have to go back to that Gmail unless there's special circumstances.
Exactly. So I guess we'll jump into the first step because we're kind of talking about it at the moment is, choose a private email provider. And so there's three that I recommend, but I want to talk broadly about why we tend to recommend those ones. So the first issue is that they have free options, but they're open source, which means that if you can't verify it yourself, of course, you know that there's been a community of people that have been verifying it. And usually free open source software tend to put up things like independent audit reports. So you can check their claims, things like whether they're end-to-end encrypted, zero knowledge encrypted, which each of these ones that we're about to suggest are. And those are really important points. So I think the ones that I recommend the most are ProtonMail, Tutanota, and cTemplar. And so Jeremy mentioned that he's gone with ProtonMail. I have both Well, actually, I have an account with each of those just to be able to test out a little bit. And I have come to the conclusion that ProtonMail is probably the best to go with as well. The difference between them, just if you're trying to sort of entry level into this and figuring out which one might work best for you, cTemplar is paid. However, you can request from their developers a free option. It's not trial. You can have it for as long as you want. But you need to go that extra step of contacting them, which to some degree makes it a little bit less private because you're either contacting them from an existing email linked to your identity, you're contacting them on Twitter or something along those lines. But that's definitely an option, cTemplar. But there's a bit of a barrier there to getting into it. Tutanota and ProtonMail are free to sign up, and you sign up directly on their website. Having said that, Tutanota makes it very, very difficult to sign up with either a VPN or Tor. Most IP addresses related to either Tor or a VPN, at least commonly known providers, they have blacklisted, which doesn't let you sign up to their email service through it, which is very frustrating because to some degree, signing up to a private email address using your main IP, like your main kind of networking identification without having a VPN or Tor is, I mean, it's a good step to do it compared to not, but at the same time, you might as well go that little bit extra step and do it through a VPN or a Tor browser. And Tutanota doesn't really let you do that for the most part. ProtonMail, on the other hand, does. So for ease of sign up and also for the ease of sign up privately, ProtonMail tends to be my go-to.
Yeah, I kind of think as well, like this is something you want to have for a long time, right? And Proton, they seem to be developing a very big ecosystem and growing fast. Another thing you might want to think about is if you do want a VPN, you can package the Proton VPN with the email and it's more cost-effective if that's something you're comfortable doing. Proton also has the Onion site, which I've not tried, but you know, just you can just kind of see some of their values that kind of help you fit the brand to what you want. And also, I think one of the things that gives me a lot of confidence is they put out a statement when everyone was sanctioning Russia that they weren't going to do that. You have more details on that. But I think that's, you want to see these brands be tested and see how they respond.
That's right. And something when choosing a service, apart from it being free open source, end-to-end encrypted, et cetera, is their reputation and how long they've been around for. Because yes, sometimes you need them to be tested through different legal jurisdictions to see how they're going to react. And you're right, ProtonMail has been very consistent with what they've said they're going to do and what they have done. cTemplar, as just an alternative example, has not been around for anywhere near as long. Now, that's not inherently a bad thing, but it just means you need to treat it with a bit more caution. And the point you make about the ecosystem, I think, is really good too, because you want to be able to grow into the service over time. So ProtonMail has now a Proton Drive, which is like their Google Drive or their Dropbox alternative that's released very, very recently. They have a calendar and they have their email, obviously, and they have a VPN service as well. And their intention is to keep expanding that out to become an entire Google Suite alternative, whereas Tutanota is focused more so on just email. I think they might be beta testing a calendar at the moment, but they're much further behind ProtonMail. And cTemplar is really just email for the time being.
Yeah, I guess when you come to it from Google, like Google's software is amazing. It's why we all use it, or you did use it. Like the calendar, like you just move things around. It works really fast. They've obviously got amazing engineers and a lot of them. So you do need, I think, to have an organization that has the potential to attract a lot of good quality engineers, because that's what's going to get you a good product. So I think there is, you know, you can, I'm hoping that Proton becomes like the business choice in the future, because you can see they're developing that suite where you can run a business from it. Just something else I wanted to say as well about payment. If you do choose to pay, you can pay for ProtonMail directly with Bitcoin, with a proper Bitcoin transaction. It's not one of those front ends that goes through like crypto.com. Like they give you a Bitcoin address and you can send it there and then you get a credit. So that's a really cool feature that I liked as well.
Definitely. And it helps a little bit more with privacy too. If anyone wants an additional challenge, apart from just signing up to a ProtonMail account, if you can sign up to it without linking it to an existing phone number or email address of yours, that's even better. Now, I don't think you really have to do that, because the way that ProtonMail deals with those things when you're signing up is they just use it as a way to ensure that you're not signing up multiple accounts linked to the same phone number or linked to the same email. But what they say is that once you have signed up, they don't have that as an identifying part of your account details. So they don't have it quite clearly, this person signed up with this old Gmail account, or this person signed up with this old phone number, or not old phone number, but you know what I mean. So I think you can do that more privately by not linking it to pre-existing numbers or emails, but you don't have to. But, you know, bonus points if you can.
So what are your thoughts on, so in the old days, we would just go, you know, if your name was John Smith, you'd be like john.smith@hotmail or John Smith. What are your thoughts on email addresses to use in the new kind of privacy-focused world?
I might still use my first name. Really depends on what the email's for, of course. If you're using it completely attached to a pseudonym, then I would say you don't want to attach to your real name whatsoever. However, if you're going to be using it in your kind of day-to-day life, personal or professional, I wouldn't be uncomfortable with having my first name in there, but I probably wouldn't have my first and my last name, or even my first name and my initials. It would just be my first name or some derivative of my first name. That would be my take on it, at least.
Yeah, so it's a new mindset, you know, like to a lot of those things that you just kind of have done. It's a new way of thinking. But the good thing was, and we'll talk about aliases, but even within ProtonMail, I'm sure the others, you can have several aliases. So you might have your full name that you just give out to your family, and you might have your first name and your last initial or something that you give out to people you don't know as well. So there's different, all these kind of tools are there for you to work with, that, work out what's the best way you want to operate from here on in.
Absolutely. So I guess the simplest step, if anyone takes anything away from this, is sign up to ideally a ProtonMail, a Tutanota, or a cTemplar email account. If that seems too confusing, just go with ProtonMail. There's low-hanging fruit there. Just by signing up to that account, you're already making your life a little bit more private and starting that transition to moving things across to your ProtonMail account. However, if you want to really upgrade your email privacy, we've mentioned email aliases a few times, so it's good to talk about what they actually are and think the prominent services that you could use. So the two, or at least look, the one that I've used a lot is Anonaddy, so anonaddy.com. And one that we have heard of recently, but I hadn't tested myself, but we heard about at the Bitcoin Bush Bash from Kitan, is a Simple Login, which functions essentially the same way. So what those are is you would sign up to, say, Anonaddy with, you could sign up with your real name, but technically you can sign up with any name. And I think bonus points for privacy if you sign up with a name that's not associated with you whatsoever. And what the email alias service allows you to do is every time you sign up to a service, you can give them essentially a new email address that isn't linked to your private email address that you sign up in, say, step one. Like say, for example, so we can kind of talk about this a bit more clearly. Say if I sign up in step one to justin@protonmail.com. I now go and sign up to Anonaddy with the name Bitcoiner rather than Justin. And so whenever I give out an email address to someone that I don't want knowing my real email address, which is justin@protonmail.com, I would give them an email alias linked to my Anonaddy service. So that might be something like, if I sign up for a newsletter, the email address I would give them might be something like newsletter@bitcoiner.anonaddy.com. There's a lot of other domains you can use. It doesn't have to be, say, like bitcoiner.anonaddy.com, but that gets very complicated. So I'll just kind of go with this one example for now. So say I've got that newsletter@bitcoiner.anonaddy.com email address. Anytime that newsletter emails me the newsletter, it would still arrive to my ProtonMail account, my justin@protonmail.com email. So I can still read it. And if I ever want to reply to it, interestingly, it'll actually look like it's being sent from the alias. So if I reply to that newsletter, the newsletter will get an email from me and it'll look like it's coming from newsletter@bitcoiner.anonaddy.com. So they never get to see my justin@protonmail.com email. I also have other features there. I can disable that alias, which means that if they start signing me up to spam, or I decide I don't really like this newsletter anymore and I don't trust their unsubscribe process, because sometimes that works, sometimes that doesn't, sometimes that seems to subscribe me to more crap that they send to me, I could just disable that alias. So every time they try to email newsletter@bitcoiner.anonaddy.com, it goes nowhere and I never receive it. It doesn't clutter up my inbox. There's more points to it, but I don't want to kind of rabbit on too much. Any sort of thoughts, Jeremy?
Yeah, see, I mean, you got me onto Anonaddy. I haven't tried Simple Login. And I have to say, like as a product manager, Anonaddy is one of the best products I've ever used, regardless of what it does. Like it's clearly been designed by someone who tried to solve this problem for themselves. And everything they do, like that's such a cool feature. It's just everything is really well designed. And I think one of the things that you... if you haven't done this already, there's the site, is it Have I Been Pwned? The major issue for me is around the security. So if you go to Have I Been Pwned and put in your normal email address, you'll see that a lot of sites have been compromised. And if you use the same password associated with that same email address, anyone can go and try out, you know, very prominent accounts and get into your account. So this is a great way of not just, if you've got a password manager, now you're having unique passwords and also unique email addresses for everything you sign into. So I think to me, the security is a big factor there. Obviously, not giving away your main email address is a great feature. And then I've used it a couple of times where there's some services that have just become too spammy and you just turn them off. This is another one where I do recommend paying for it. I think it's $1 a month. I mean, it's very reasonable for how good the product is. It has a an extension. So if you want, because you obviously you can sign up with your own alias, but you can even sign up with their domain and just some random characters as the, you know, the bit before the at, which is in no way ties you to that email address. So it's really good if you just want to buy like one thing from one shop online and you never plan to go there again. You just give one of these addresses on the fly, don't even have to go into the account, and then you never have to really worry about like if they spam you. Even I think from Protomail you can even click turn off the alias from within the email. Don't have to go to a non-addy. So like it's such a great product that you don't even basically ever have to go back into it once you've set it up.
I think that's a really good point, because I've logged into my a non-addy account about twice in the last year, but I use it very frequently. The idea of just creating an email address on the fly, so you can create the anything that comes before the at. So it could be newsletter at, or it could be podcast at, or shop at, whatever it might be. You can just make that name up on the fly. As long as you have the correct domain that comes afterwards, which in the example I gave before would be bitcoiner.anonaddy.com, it'll know to forward those emails to whatever email you've set to forward it to. In the example, it was justin@protonmail.com. So not having to log back into the account just makes it really easy to use. It's only if you would want to then, yeah, disable one of those accounts. But like you mentioned, that can be, that feature is available even from ProtonMail or from the web extension. And look, logging back into the account every once in a while is not that kind of outrageous or out of the question. Something that you mentioned, which I think is a really good point, is this is not just about privacy, is it? It's about security. Definitely. And it's kind of security through privacy. So if you use the same email address for multiple different accounts, yeah, if that's ever compromised in a data breach, the way that hackers often get into accounts is they're not targeting you specifically. I mean, that can happen, but generally that's not the way it goes. They get a very large data breach file that says, here's a bunch of email addresses and a bunch of passwords that have been associated with those email addresses. And then they do something called credential stuffing. So it's an automated brute force attack where they go to all these different prominent websites, could be banks, email addresses, social media, and of course, exchanges. And then they just try all of those various login details, and that's how they get in. And most of the recent articles, I'm thinking of Australian articles that we've talked about in previous podcasts, where people have logged into their exchange and found they've been, you know, wiped out, or someone's compromised their email address and then gotten into their exchange from that. All of these have come from credential stuffing attacks because of a data leak and because that person used the same kind of passwords and the same email for a lot of different logins. So being able to upgrade your privacy by using a different email for every account you have with something like an aliasing service that we're talking about here, and of course using different passwords and linking it in with the password manager, which we'll have perhaps a separate podcast and article out in the fullness of time to explain a bit about password managers. But that just improves your security so much. You're no longer low-hanging fruit, which means you're very unlikely to be targeted in that way.
Yeah, and if you think about, so I think MailChimp had a data breach this week. So if you think about, if you just use one email address and you're in a database that has your name in it, all you have to do is one data breach associating your name with one email address, and then anywhere else there's the email address is in a database, they can link you straight away. So you kind of just, instead of putting out this like one, here I am, this is my email address and this is everything I've done, you're just putting out these random fingerprints that are, you know, no one can really connect together.
That's right. It's like a breadcrumb situation, because some people, I know the way that I've thought about this in the past at least, is that, oh, well, I'm just putting in my name and my email address to this site. So that's not so big of a deal. However, if you use that same email on another site where you have your home address, and then you put that email on another site where you have your phone number, and then you put that same email on another site where you have, say, your Bitcoin exchange, and there's funds in there, someone, especially if a few of these places had a data breach, would easily put that together and say, well, that's interesting. Now I've got this person's email, their phone number, their real name, their home address, and I know they have some money in this exchange account. That in and of itself helps with things like social engineering attacks,
yes,
even if they can't compromise those accounts directly. So really important to have security by privacy.
These data breaches are not hypotheticals. I mean, we've had MailChimp. What was the other one? The CRM?
HubSpot. Yeah. There was about 30 different companies like Unchained Capital, BlockFi, Swan. So like some very big companies were customers of HubSpot. And again, all that data was breached.
Yeah. So I think it's kind of like, it's almost like when you sign up now, that's becoming public data. Like it's the safest assumption is to assume that it is public data, because that's essentially, unfortunately, how it's turning out to be.
Yeah, very true. So any other nuance here, or any other problems that we sometimes have?
The one thing I've found It is a bit funny trying to verbally tell someone that your email address is like this thing, anonaddy.com. So I've sort of struggled with that. It's a very minor situation. I also haven't found a good way to initiate an email conversation with someone. Like if I just had their email address, I don't believe that's a feature that exists where you can start an email conversation that way. But I mean, it's been pretty minor when I've had to kind of do that. And you could use aliases from within ProtonMail to get around part of that problem. But overall, yeah, I do kind of want to reiterate, the password manager makes this much easier because if you're going to have unique passwords and unique usernames, like trying to do that without a password manager would be impossible.
I think
I'd strongly recommend getting the password manager to enable you to do all of this.
If you are looking for a password manager, generally, I would just suggest Bitwarden. Again, free, open source, end-to-end encrypted, good reputation. We definitely will do another podcast on password managers as well as an article to spell that out. So I wouldn't wait for that though. I think get there and experiment a bit with it and deal with it the same way as transitioning to a private email. You don't need to go and change all of your passwords and logins all at once. Just do them bit by bit on an as needs basis. And then when time permits and see this as like a 6, 12, 18 month process, you're just taking gradual steps toward better privacy and better security, which is the better way to look at it rather than an all or nothing step. I think that's probably most of the details that we wanted to give out. You know, there's a lot of customizability really on how you want to use it. You know, some people will use email aliases as a way to just categorize things. So they'll have bills, newsletters, exchanges, and that will be the part that comes before the at. Therefore, there's multiple services using that one address. And again, there's privacy trade-offs to that, but convenience trade-offs. So there will be a little nuance that we probably haven't discussed here that you start to realize, you know, you can customize it for yourself when you get into it. If you've ever got any kind of queries about that or anything to share that you think might be a better way of doing it, you know, please reach out to us, of course. But I just want to reiterate that we've sort of mentioned three steps here. One is sign up to a private email account like ProtonMail, sign up to an alias forwarding service like AnonAddy or Simple Login. And the third step is start giving out those email aliases to services that you either are newly subscribing to or change your existing email address in the services that you already have to one of these email alias forwarding services. And those are your three steps. Just do it gradually over time.
Yeah, you just got to slowly do it. Every time you get an email, just change it up. And it just becomes a habit. Like, it doesn't take that long. I think we need to be upfront. There are a couple of drawbacks into moving this way because, as we said, you know, Google is super convenient at the cost of a lot of other things. One of the things that are not roadblocks, but one of the things I found wasn't as easy was setting up a video call. So if you want to do that in Google, it's incredibly easy. Basically, it's already there. The link is there. Google Meets. You just send someone an invitation. It's there. So things that I've tried, there's a service called Jitsi, which is an open source video conferencing, and you can like take a hyperlink and put it into your calendar invitation. I also recently tried a Signal group call. So if you have a Signal group set up, say for your family, you can actually just press the camera button and start a call and they get a message where they can join that call. And I found it very good, actually. So yeah, that's something, you know, to start thinking about. And it makes you wonder, like, what data analysis could be happening on all those Google Meets videos?
Well, I was going to say, that's the thing is, if you go to a private email and then still use Google Meets, probably not the best option. It's a good intermediary step, but you're right. Finding something like Jitsi, free open source, end-to-end encrypted, or like you say, Signal. Anyone who's been following Impervious AI and their layer 3 solution. So layer 3 means they're building on layer 2. Layer 2 is Lightning, and then layer 1 is the Bitcoin on-chain, you know, time chain part. So they're building on layer 3, a web browser, and this web browser has, I'm going to forget half of the stuff, but it's got like a VPN integrated into it. It's got voice calls. It's got video calls. It's also got like a web browser itself and a search engine. And there's a few other bits and pieces that they're integrating. It looks outrageous, the amount of things that they're delivering on. And if I remember right, it's April 6th. So that's probably American time, which means a couple of days that'll be out. They've already been posting up demos of their sort of Skype/Zoom/Google Meets equivalent calls. And this is all over the Lightning Network. And they're called ephemeral, which means that once they are closed, there is no trace of them having occurred previously. So it's sort of even better than end-to-end encrypted. There's no metadata. There's no trace that it even occurred in the first place. So over time, there'll be more and more options of having things like voice chat or video chat that are properly secured and properly private too.
Yeah, I feel like the privacy space is like earlier in its kind of evolution than even Bitcoin.
Mm.
And so like some of the technologies, they're still being built out. And I think eventually, you know, you'll go to Proton Calendar and you'll click a button that does Jitsi or Signal messaging or something like that.
Yep.
Like it'll just be part of it, but you know, they haven't had the time to build all those features. So still, I think, get in now, but just, you know that you're part of this journey and that the stuff is going to get better and easy to use. But I mean, for example, a non-Addy, I think that's a product that's already there. It's amazing what it can do and how well it's been thought out. But some of the other stuff that's not quite as convenient, I don't know, I find I'm able to live with it because I feel comfortable knowing that the people I'm working with, the companies I'm working with, have much better brand ideals and they're actually just selling a product to me. And that's why these products, I think, will eventually be a lot better.
Definitely. I think there's practical benefits of having better privacy and security. It feels better from like a values or a, like an ethos sort of standpoint. And, you know, you learn something each time. You need to find a bit of a workaround to an existing service that you use. And I know we're all time poor, so sometimes finding that workaround is not that much fun, but it does feel rewarding once you have it. And it's a good little side quest to go on. It's a very meaningful and valuable one to do. Once you've done it.
I tell you, it is quite a nice feeling starting with a fresh email account after 15 years and being able to like just get rid of all that clutter and use an email account properly again, you know, where you'd actually just delete emails you don't need. And you, yeah, I think that's, there is a reward in there and that can actually save you time. So there is, for those who are thinking, I just don't have the time, there is actually a reward at the end of it as well.
Exactly. I know once my Gmail got out of control after the first few years, the next decade or so, I've just let it run rampant. It's just, it felt like too far gone. Yep. Whereas now, starting with a fresh one, I'm very careful about not giving that email out, only using an alias and shutting down aliases that start to get spammed by different services. Consider it. Reach out if you have any queries. And if you think this is useful for anyone, please share it around. Any final comments before we finish off, Jeremy?
We say it a lot, but just take one small step.
Exactly. And look, to smash this phrase over and over again, don't let perfect be the enemy of good. A couple of small steps and you'll find that it's usually easier and more beneficial than sometimes what we consider. Well, thanks for listening. Again, if you have any comments, reach out on our Twitter, HardBlockBTC. Thanks for listening.